using the transfer of development credits program to subdivide an existing 40-acre parcel map into two parcels of 20 acres each, located within the agriculture land use category at 4242 Los Topolos, Willow Creek Road in Templeton. The title on the cover sheet needs to be amended to include that this item was continued from May 23, 2006. Under added items for a closed session, pending litigation, it is the intention of the board to meet in closed session concerning the following items. You have two added items. They're misnumbered on your pink sheet. They should be items 12, American Serengeti Court versus County, and item 13, Napomo Community Services District versus County of San Luis Obispo. That's your changes for today.
Thank you. Next item is presentations. Is there a motion for approval?
Public comment. Public comment. Is that public comment first?
Yeah. Okay. We shall do that.
All right.
Going back to the reorder of our items in front of us, we'll start with a public comment. And first request to speak is Mark Phillips, followed by Jess Arnold.
Good morning. My name is Mark Phillips. Excuse me. I'm from Atascadero, and I'm here to talk about GE food and crops again. I need to keep this in people's attention because a lot of this doesn't get reported on the news very well. The most recent contamination event is the long grain rice contamination. They have now found long grain contaminated rice on the grocery shelves in Europe. It's in Germany. Japan has stopped importing this long grain rice. The EU is testing all long grain rice and impounding the shipments that have proven to be contaminated. This contamination issue is something that SLOGE Free talked a lot about during the Measure Q campaign, and I don't like to say we told you so, but we did. And we're telling you now, again, this is only going to get worse. We need some local control because the state, the current laws right now, follow this, it's not very complicated. We have no labeling. We have no notification. We have no buffer zones. And we have no liability issues that have been worked out regarding what happens when crops are contaminated. And I read a lot about the possibility that organic crops are going to get contaminated, which is true, but also conventional crops get contaminated. And that's what's happening with long grain rice. It has nothing to do with organic farmers. It's conventional farmers that are at risk, too. And that's virtually every farmer in this county. The only genetically engineered crop that we know of is being grown in Cal Poly. It's corn. I believe it's the Roundup Ready variety. And we'd like to see testing of the organic crops at Cal Poly. I believe they also grow corn there, I think. I'm not positive on that. But regardless, we need to be checking for the contamination of this GE crop that's being grown. So the test kits are pretty cheap. That's something the Ag Commissioner could put together pretty easily, and we could look for the contamination that we know will occur. And the sooner you find it, the easier it is to deal with. We need to be very wise about this. Now, SB 1056 failed despite the efforts of this board, which wanted it to be approved. That was pretty amazing for us sitting in the audience, knowing these facts and having the wisdom of this board in general, with apologies to Bianchi and Representative Supervisor Patterson, that you'd rather not have even the ability or any other county to have the ability to do anything about it. I mean, it's crazy. We need a notification program. We need to know when these crops are being planted. We need to get the test kits in place so that we can test for contamination when these crops are planted. It's the only reasonable thing to do. It's cheap. It's easy. And there wasn't really even much adverse reaction to that from the farm community, from what I heard at the last meeting. So it even shouldn't be that controversial. But you need to have all of the players in the game when these things are being made up. Not just the Farm Bureau, who certainly should be involved in this decision process, but also SLOGE Free. We represented close to 50,000 people at the last election on this. We probably represent more if they hear more about the contamination events that have been occurring. So please include us in your deliberations. Thank you.
Mr. Arnold, followed by Gary Fowler.
Good morning. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I'm here this morning to talk about the Cuesta College Auditorium. Three of you were on the board back in 2000 when a contract was signed. The auditor controller, Jerry Seebach, went out to Cuesta College and negotiated a contract for the county to give Cuesta College $66,000 to help with the rehabilitation of the auditorium. In exchange for that, the county was to get free rental of the auditorium 12 times per calendar year. Subsequently, as you know, back in April, shortly before the bond election, Cuesta College hired an engineering firm to inspect the auditorium, and the engineering firm said, this auditorium is probably not safe in an earthquake, and so Cuesta College closed the auditorium. Coincidentally, it was shortly before the bond election in which they were asking for money for a new theater, but that's another subject. But anyway, so the auditorium is closed. Nobody can use it. The county can't. Nobody can use it. But certainly the county paid the money to make the auditorium safe. It's in the contract. You can see it. This money went to Cuesta to make that auditorium safe. If it's not safe, they're not fulfilling the contract. Therefore, I'm asking the board to ask Jerry Seebach to go back to Cuesta College and say, please give us our $66,000 back because you are in breach of contract. So that's my request. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Fowler, followed by David Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Gary Fowler, Mill Street, San Luis Obispo. Last week, the Chamber of Commerce distributed the article that I provided to you regarding an M60 tank to be presented to the county and displayed on the front lawn of the Veterans Memorial Building at Grand Avenue and Monterey Streets as a permanent fixture. Having served in the military for almost 40 years and now retired as an officer, I have a great devotion to our armed services. My father gave his life in World War II in military service. Almost all of my male relatives, now mostly deceased, served in the armed forces. I know a great deal about this tank, having served in the 40th Armored Division of the California National Guard and was trained at Fort Knox, Kentucky as a tank commander. This vehicle should not be displayed as it's way too small of a front lawn of the Vets Building. All too often, events are held at this building which require displays, photo gatherings, and other assemblages on the front lawn. Having such a large piece of equipment such as this at that location would hinder future use of the area, in my opinion. The chances for young people to climb upon this vehicle could also cause a lot of injuries, and it would, in my opinion, draw a great graffiti clientele as well. The artillery piece that is currently on the lawn fell well represents the facility along with the current military museum. Over the last 20 years, I have been responsible for having that artillery piece painted either olive or camouflage through donation of services from Camp San Luis Obispo and Camp Roberts at no charge to the county. I wonder if this tank is displayed, who's going to be responsible for the care and maintenance of it in the future once it's installed. I also wonder who's going to be liable insurance-wise for any injuries that should occur. The proper location for this tank, in my opinion, is Camp San Luis Obispo along with other proper military equipment that's currently displayed there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by John Belcher.
Good morning. My name is Dave Dugan. I'm a resident in Los Osos and a candidate for the Los Osos Community Service District. What a difference a couple of weeks can make. As the community of Los Osos prepares for the November elections, we are all waiting for word that the governor has signed 2701. For something that had been deemed so urgent, it's taken a long time to get signed. Oh, that's right, they amended it. Speaking of amending 2701, since it's only half the legislation it used to be, I would like to know if the county staff is planning to do a reevaluation of the legislation to determine if it meets the county's criteria for undertaking the Los Osos wastewater project. I assume they would. Also, the district is formulating a septic system management program, something that should have been initiated over 20 years ago, as it is one of the requirements mandated in Resolution 8312. It is also one of the guidelines as stated in the basin plan and is used as a control measure for water testing to avoid the unnecessary sewering of an area. For some odd reason, these control measures were never implemented. Speaking of science, several years ago, an isotopic study to determine the source of the nitrates in the Los Osos water basin was started and never completed, but instead was shelled after the person doing the study had questioned the assumptions being made on an incomplete study. Again, there was a question of controls that would have delineated the natural sources of nitrates from the man-made sources. And finally, if the county staff should determine that the county should not take on the Los Osos wastewater project, I would ask that the LOCSD be notified before the media or other agencies. This will assure that the residents of Los Osos, who are also residents of the second district of the county, will not be blindsided by others, which has been so often been the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Belcher, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm here to ask the supervisors to consider convening meetings between homeowners and staff on the issue of maintenance and...
Want to give us your name for the record, Mr.
John Belcher, for the record. Maintenance of Strand Avenue along the Oceano Dunes State Park. As you may know, there is approximately 60-foot public street, a paper street, that is between the homeowners and the state park. The homeowners probably between 30 and 50 homeowners along this Strand Avenue stretch. The homeowners are not seeking necessarily development rights associated with this 60 feet, and they're not intending to block access to the public should they continue to use this for ingress and egress. But for many years, the county has declined to maintain this area, and it's become sort of a maintenance no man's land. And the homeowners have a great deal of difficulty because of public activities on here, but also the encroaching sand dunes and misunderstandings between county, coastal commission, state lands, and homeowners over who can maintain this area. We have attempted abandonment requests. We have attempted to appeal those denials to the board, but there's no procedure for this. The only procedure that's really left to us is to ask the board to convene some meetings between your engineering staff and homeowners to see if we can come up with some creative ideas to address the problems. So that's the sole purpose of the request here today. I hope you'll refer this to staff and get back to us so we can do something about this sort of festering problem down on the Oceano coastline. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Greening.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. What I just passed out is Arts Obispo, compliments of our County Arts Council, which is always grateful for your ongoing support. On page 8, you'll find a story about the public art in this building, much of which is now installed. When it is all in place, will there be some sort of event to allow the public to meet the artists? I think it would be an excellent idea. When you walk down the corridor toward the cafe, you will see how the space is transformed and our county is putting its best foot forward. Thank you for making this happen. On the front page of Arts Obispo, you'll see the lead story about open studios. I hope you'll take advantage of the opportunity next month to meet our artists in their natural habitat. Over 200. Open Studios is, for our visual artist, what Central Coast Grown is for our agriculturists, an opportunity to keep our resources local and, if you purchase art, to build the local economy while enjoying the superior quality of what is locally produced. We seem to have soil that produces fine food and fine artists, so let's celebrate it. On page 7, you'll find two stories about young people. The Heart Gallery at the Arts Center is about local foster children seeking adoption and the local photographers who have donated their time to help them tell their stories. I have mixed feelings here. The pictures on the wall seem in some ways like a throwback to the days of the orphan trains. Yet it is probably salutary for us to be troubled by the comparison. We're challenged to show that we are today more evolved than in those days, and that we can find places in our homes and our hearts for these young people. On a more celebratory note, six local students were chosen to attend the statewide InnerSpark program of the California Institute of the Arts. I hope you will find a way for the county to honor these talented and hardworking young artists and give them a chance to share their experiences. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Margotson?
Richard Margotson. I want to talk today about the Los Osos Sewer Project. It's not in your hands at this point. At some point it may be. You're going to have to pick a design, a location, and you're also going to have to deal with funding sources, and that's what I want to talk about today. Back in 2001, the possibility was available to the community for a 0% interest loan. But the terms back then were that the district would have to put up 1/6 matching funds in order to get the rest of the loan at 0% interest. I have in my possession, and I left them on the kitchen table today. I was going to have copies for all of you. I'll bring them in the future. There was a communication between our district manager, Bruce Buell, and the state asking for a strictly 0% interest loan. The response from the state was that that wasn't available, that you had the option of the matching fund loan, putting up 1/6. In that letter, it also states that this option has been brought to your community in the past, but you refused to look at that option. Now, the letter also stated that it would take special legislation to get a strictly 0% interest loan. Subsequent letter, Mr. Buell contacted Assemblyman Maldonado, asking him if he would carry legislation for a 0% interest loan. Well, nothing came of that. My concern is when you get to that point of looking at funding options and the staff looks at funding options, if that's still available. That option may not be available at this point because the program's been changed, but if it took special legislation for the district to have that option available now, I think either Senator Maldonado or our current Assemblyman Blakesley may carry that legislation forward, because it doesn't take a genius to figure out that 0% interest on 5/6 of a loan, even if the district has to borrow or the county has to borrow at a higher bond rate, is still an advantage to the district, which is paying for the highest per capita sewer project in the country. The interest on the original $93 million loan over the life of the loan was going to be almost $27 million. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our public comment period. At this time, we'll move to presentations. Is there a motion for approval?
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Lenthal, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Mr. Greek.
Good morning, Supervisor Asagi and members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here assisting you with honoring and recognizing county employees this morning for 20 and 30 years of service with the county. These are the individuals that ensure that we are working towards your vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. So with that, let me start with some of the logistics relative to the 20-year recipients. We're going to break them into two groups this morning so that it's a little easier to do the photo op. And so as I read your name, please come forward, and Heather will be providing you with your pin. I'm going to ask the audience to please hold your applause until we're through the entire first group. Same message for the second group, though, by the way. And then after the photo, all of the recipients are invited to follow Heather's direction and shake the board members' hands. So with that, we will start on the list of 20-year recipients for this morning. Agricultural Commissioner Judy Grote. Yay. Okay, Assessor Brenda Dye. Assessor Barbara Edginton. And a third one from the assessor, Stephen Wolfinger. Auditor Controller Connie Booten, Clerk Recorder Diane Grayton, Social Services Janice Sykes, District Attorney Thomas Tolbert, General Services Anthony Llewellyn, Mental Health Dennis Camp, Mental Health Laura Morgan, and Mental Health Molly Peters. And finally, for the first group, I've got two more, pardon me. Mental Health Linda Cranston Tolan. And finally, Planning and Building Gordon Owen. And you may now applaud and take photos. Second group, but equally good, starting with Planning and Building, John Bussell. Probation, Jodine Forsman. Probation, Cheryl Gradeville. Public Health, Kit Stamp. Public Health, Gail Filer. Public Works, Daniel Erdman. Public Works, Richard Marshall. Public Works, James Sweeney. Public Works, Joe Marino. Public Works, Dan Lemaire's. And Sheriff Coroner David Cantor. And you may now applaud and take pictures. Okay, the ceremony's not over. I guess the advocacy groups are going to go with their staff members. Anyway, at this point, we have two 30-year recipients this morning. I'll be handing this off to Chairman Asajian. Understand one individual will not be attending, but we will continue to go ahead with the ceremony. So what I would ask is that as Supervisor Asajian reads the employee's name, they come up to the right podium. The department head that's going to be speaking is welcome to come up to the left podium. And then after Supervisor Asajian's comments, the employee can go up and shake the board members' hands, get their gift, and then they're welcome to make some comments after their department head has spoke. So they get the last word today. That doesn't happen often. So Supervisor Sajjan, all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Greek. If Rick Newfield will come forward, please. Morning, Rick. Rick began his county career with the Sheriff's Department in 1976. He quickly progressed through the department, serving as dispatcher, correctional officer, patrol deputy, detective, and sergeant. During his time in the Sheriff's Detective Division, Rick worked as a criminal and sexual assault investigator, crime scene investigator, voice stress analyzer, and supervisor. His impact on the law enforcement community has been significant during his years as a detective, crime scene investigator, and detective supervisor. He was involved in nearly 200 homicide investigations. Rick has been a member of San Luis Obispo community for 48 years, has been married to his wife, Claire Ann. Is Claire with you today, Rick? We'll have her come and stand right next to you to make you look better. Would Claire come forward, please?
Good idea. I can't.
And they've been married for 28 years, and they have 2 children and 2 grandchildren. At this time, Rick, if you'll come forward and accept your gift. Sheriff Hedges.
Thank you very much. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner. As you mentioned, Rick started off as a dispatcher, and I think if he thought back 30 years ago, that was probably the best position that he had, because as a dispatcher, he could get away with telling everyone where to go. And now, as he's moved up to a sergeant, he's had quite a career with the Sheriff's Department. He's been a very instrumental part of the department, both in patrol and then as an ID technician with the Sheriff's Department. He truly was involved in many, many investigations that had a tremendous impact on our county as far as being able to put together the CSI type of things that we see on TV. Rick did that in real life, and we very much appreciate that. Now as a field sergeant, he can provide that experience to the deputies that he supervises out in the field and provide that added value to the citizens here of San Luis Obispo County. We appreciate the fact that Rick's been with us for 30 years, and he's guaranteed me that we have a few more years to look forward to as he provides a service to not only the Sheriff's Department, but the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. Congratulations, Rick.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Sheriff Hedges. He and I were partners way back when I first started in detectives, probably about 23 years ago. I've worked for 4 sheriffs now. I'd like to thank each and every one of those sheriffs. And most importantly, I'd like to thank my wife for putting up with me all these years. Thank you to the board.
Thank you. Our next recipient is Beverly Estes, and unfortunately she's not able to be with us, but allow me to read a little bit about her. She began her career with DSS, Department of Social Services, in 1975 after working as a dispatcher for the County Sheriff's Department. That department's loss was quickly recognized as a gain for DSS as Bev stepped smoothly into an account clerk position and began to climb to her current position as an employment service supervisor. Bev served as a senior account clerk, a program review technician, and an eligibility resource specialist before assuming her current supervision of the benefit recovery unit. Bev's unique blend of accounting, systems, and program knowledge is an asset to both her unit and to the department as a whole. Along the way, she also raised 4 children. Bev is a friend and a mentor to many and is recognized for her strong leadership abilities. The Board of Supervisors thanks Bev for her 30 years of commitment and contribution to the county and the Department of Social Services. Would the department head please come forward and accept the gift for Bev? We don't see any close friend of Bev that happened to be here. If not,
I think the Human Resources Department can handle that for you, Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you. That's congratulations for having me. Thank you, Mr. Greek. With that, we'll move forward to our consent agenda item. And first request to speak is Mr. Greening, followed by David Dugan.
I'm Eric Greening on item B16, and I'm not asking you to pull the item or take any separate action. I just want to thank you for sharing this space with the League of Women Voters so that they can hold a forum here. Their forums are always extremely informative, and even when they take a position on a ballot measure, they make sure that when they have an informational forum from the public, both sides and all sides have an equal opportunity to be heard so that voters can make up their own mind with the best information possible. I would also hope that you would, within this county government center, make available their pros and cons on the ballot measures. Those are always very useful and often more concise than what comes with the ballot pamphlets themselves. And I hope you would perhaps share a word or two to publicize this event that you're making the space available to. I note that it's on September 21st and that the room is to be used from 3 to 7 p.m. I'm not sure just what the starting time is. I know they'll be getting out their own publicity, but as part of your support for this event, I would hope that you would also let the radio and television audience that's out there know what it is, just to enhance the good work you do by making the space available. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. This enhancement project for Los Osos, for this street that you're going to be doing, I don't know if this is premature. I don't know how this is going to affect if they decided to go with one collection system or another, how this may end up costing Los Osos more money in replacing whatever they have to tear up in the road. I was originally against this so-called traffic calming project because it's more of a make Los Osos beautiful project to me. They're going to be spending upwards of $60,000 on this project, I believe, and maybe that money could be well spent somewhere else until we decide what kind of collection system is going to be going into Los Osos for the wastewater project. And I don't know if you guys have looked at whether or not it's going to be there's going to be some kind of repair process that the Los Osos is going to have to pay for once you put this project in, and then we have to come along and tear it up. The step collection system is far different from a gravity system, and it doesn't have to go in the middle of the road to be done. And I still have my misgivings that this is just a beautification project. I don't believe it's going to slow traffic down on that road. It's just not going to happen. Maybe you might get a few people slowing down. But as an example, we have the new bike trail in Los Osos, and I live right near it. And we have the crossing marks and everything there to let people know that there's people that could be crossing there. But at all hours of the day, people are hitting that bump over 45 miles an hour. Not everybody, but a lot of people. They're going to drive fast if they want to or not, whether if you have traffic calming or not. And I'm kind of having misgivings too, is that you're going to be taking away the peripheral vision of some of the drivers. So if a small animal or a child runs across the road, they're not going to be able to see them, and a child's going to end up getting hit or somebody's pet. So I would ask you to reconsider not putting this out to bid, or at least extending the date of when the project's going to start until you find out what's going to happen in Los Osos. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak on consent agenda item. Anyone else? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Mr. Robert, any items for you, sir?
None for the day, thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Madam Bianchi?
None, thank you.
Mr. Lantol?
No, sir.
I would just quickly, on item B26, want to thank Mr. Ramey and Mr. McNulty from Council's office for your very detailed contract. I'm very pleased to see that it finally happened. Thanks for your efforts. With that, I'll entertain a motion for...
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, including the amendments, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. A roll call, please.
There were no amendments on the consent agenda, I don't believe.
I don't know. Pink sheet.
Oh, okay.
Make one.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Lentol?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Thank you. Well, with that, we'll take our first hearing item for this morning. If Madam Clerk will introduce that, please.
Your first item this morning is item C1. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by Donald Carnine of the Subdivision Review Board's disapproval of a request for a tentative parcel map CO05-0090 using the Transcript Development Credits Program to subdivide an existing 40-acre parcel map into two parcels of 20 acres each located within the agriculture land use category at 4242 Los Tablas Willow Creek Road in Templeton, the 1st District. Again, this item was amended this morning just to show that this item was being continued from May 23rd. Recommendation is for approval.
Thank you. Our staff.
Your microphone.
Mike, see if that the green light is on the bottom of your mic.
Good morning. I am Nick Forrester with the County Planning Department. The item before you today is the appeal by Donald Carnine of the Subdivision Review Board's denial of a two-lot parcel map using the Transfer of Development Credit Program. Cammy? This is a vicinity map showing the general vicinity of the project on Los Tablas Willow Creek Road and the intersection of Niterer Road. This land use category map shows that the project site is in the agricultural zone category. Here we have an aerial photograph showing the project site currently developed with two single family residences. This exhibit shows the project site and some of the surrounding parcel sizes. This exhibit shows the proposed map. I think it's important to point out a few changes between the last proposal and this application. Staff has worked with the applicant in an attempt to minimize the environmental impacts of the project. The proposed map is intended to maximize the agricultural viable soils on what we're calling the ag viable parcel, parcel one. It's also intended to maximize protection of the existing oak woodland on the parcel we're calling the oak woodland parcel, parcel two. This item was continued from the January 24, 2006 Board of Supervisors hearing. At that time, the Board of Supervisors took tentative action to uphold the appeal and instructed staff to prepare an environmental determination and findings for approval. I think it's important to point out that the project has incorporated environmental mitigations in order to minimize potential significant impacts to the underlying agricultural soils on proposed parcel one. The applicant has agreed to limit structural development on proposed parcel one to 10,000 square foot total. Additionally, the applicant has agreed to a mitigation measure prohibiting unpermitted removal of oak trees on proposed parcel two. And as instructed by the board, staff has prepared an environmental determination and findings and conditions upholding the appeal, overturning the decision of the Subdivision Review Board, and conditionally approving the parcel map. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Forrester, if you backtrack one slide, you made the comment that the appellant has agreed to a mitigation measure prohibiting unpermitted removal of oak trees on proposed parcel two. I didn't see that in the conditions. Where was that actually?
That was in the developer statement as part of the environmental determination for the project.
Okay, and does that become part of the permanent record
That is correct. It does. An environmental mitigation that's agreed to through a signed developer statement does become a condition of approval for the life of the project.
Okay. Even if it's not delineated in the condition?
Correct. It is signed to in a developer statement, so it is legally binding.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any further questions for staff members? Seeing none, this is an appeal, so we go to the appellant first. The representative, come forward. Give us your name for the record, please.
Good morning. Toby Osgood from EMK and Paso Robles for Surveyors and Engineers, and I represent the Carnine and Vieira families. This is our third time before you. The last time it wasn't approved because of a noticing requirement. Since then, we have been working with Nick and the Ag Commissioner's office to try to bring in some mitigation measures that they desired and my clients have agreed to. We have also, right from the beginning, said no second residences, which is probably the key issue here. There's really not going to be any change to the land at all. And so we're here to answer questions. Mr. and Mrs. Carnine and Mrs. Vieira. Mr. Vieira had to work today and couldn't make it, though he had been to all the other hearings. But we'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you. In this case, we have the applicant appellant is the same party. I don't have any requests to speak from the public at large. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to any of the appellant or applicants at this time. If you have any last words before I bring it back to the supervisors.
Hi, I'm Julie Vieira. I do have just a few last words. I know I'm the daughter of the applicant. I'm sure you all remember this project. I don't know if you dream about it like I do, but you remember it. Unfortunately, my husband Tom's at work today, as I mentioned, so he was unable to attend. My family has resided on the property since 1989, and we're attempting to divide it into two 20-acre parcels so that I can purchase my side of the property. The project is recommended for approval, and it's received acceptance from the appropriate agencies. Even the Ag Department has reviewed the project and found that there's no potential for significant environmental impacts. My husband and I are on the board of the Ag Advisory Committee for Templeton High School, and we too are concerned that we preserve the agricultural intensity of our community. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. I believe that our project is going to benefit this goal by creating two parcels which will be considered ag-sustaining properties. I feel that we've made many accommodations to accomplish this goal and to eliminate any of the prior concerns that were raised. We've agreed to give up our future right to conduct secondary dwellings on both properties. We've adjusted the split line now to create the habitat parcel. And we've even agreed to restricted oak tree removal in the future. We've even received the consent from our neighbors. And it's also my understanding that the county has now eliminated the similar use of TDCs in our area. So that concern of creating a precedence has even now been eliminated. I hope that you will understand our goal and accept this project because it's my lifelong dream to raise my two sons in an agricultural community. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you go away, let me see. I have...
I'm going to make a motion.
Well, hold on. Okay, I'll come to you last. And Ms. Bianchi, was your life for any questions for the applicant or appellant?
Oh, I didn't have any questions. So I have a comment when the public...
Okay, then I'll go to Mr. Patterson for a question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Vieira, is your residence on Parcel 1 or Parcel 2?
Parcel 2.
Okay, and that's where the Oak Woodland area has been delineated.
Correct.
And I know you're very involved in agriculture, and one of the questions I have is whether or not you would be able to pursue what you want to do within the area that you have available, since primarily your parcel is the one with most of the oak woodland on it.
Yes, that's a good question, actually. To be honest, I think we will still be able to accomplish what we want to. In all honesty, I'm not sure that it's really to the benefit of what the Ag Commissioner is trying to do. It's my personal opinion. I think it might have been better served to leave it the line where we had it initially, but I understand that that was their concern and their right to suggest that we, you know, alter the line. And in doing so, I still have a good area that I can use and utilize. But we raise pigs and chickens and have a small garden, that type of thing. And that's, it's a thickly wooded hillside, but it's always been that way, and we really don't touch it anyway, so I think that we'll be able to still live within it, but in my heart, I'm not sure it's really the best, but...
Well, your family owns the other parcel, too, so it's likely that you could
Bill
over across the line a little bit if necessary.
Right, that's what I'm hoping. I think that that should work.
And, oh, family relations keep working, right, yeah. Don't make Mama mad, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to put the cow over there now, but that's okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. At this time, a final word very quickly.
Supervisor Chajian, thank you. That does raise an issue that was discussed extensively when the Ag Commissioner requested the change in the line. From a surveyor's point of view, I think the new line is a bit silly. And from an agriculturalist, as you all know, David Nigro dry farm grapes on Chimney Rock Road near the schoolhouse in Adelaide. And if I had to deal with a line like that, I would get very frustrated trying to do an agricultural operation. I know the Ag Commissioner said, oh, let's change the line and put all the oak woodlands on one parcel and all the usable, good agricultural usable land on the other. As a practical agriculturalist, I thought that that was not the right thing to do. And would like to see it go back to the original configuration. That would be the only change that I would ask. But we don't want to continue the hearing, and we don't want to go through all of this again. This is our fifth public hearing on this, and if you choose to just approve it with the goofy line in it, go ahead. Thank you. And I'm here to answer questions.
Thank you. With that, at this time, I'll close to the public, bring it back to the supervisors. I'll come back to you last, Mr. Robert, for your motion. Ms. Bianchi?
Well, no, usually I have not approved of using TDCs on agricultural property, but this application came through initially prior to the moratorium, and so we do have to comply with the law, and the law at that time was that they were legal, so I will approve it, but I'm glad there's a moratorium.
Thank you. Do you want us to have a...
If I guess, please.
Please.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment, too, that when this came before us the first time, I was not in favor of it. At the time, the Ag Commissioner's office did feel that the parcels were not as viable as they are currently configured, and we have addressed the issue of using TDCs on ag land. That's not going to happen again, hopefully, now that we've changed the ordinance and corrected that. And I think because of the applicant's willingness to work with the planning department to mitigate the environmental issues that were originally raised and to work with the Ag Commissioner's office to try to keep the parcels as agriculturally viable from their perspective in terms of where the actual open land is that can be farmed and at the same time preserve the oak woodlands, I think we've addressed the issues as best we can, and I'm going to support it.
Mr. Orbit.
I'm going to lead off with a question. Cammie, if we change the line back, the environmental changes, doesn't it? That's what I thought.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Got you by the whatever, yeah. But I do agree with the family. I think the line may have one reason, but it defeats what the TDC and the agricultural lands was entitled to do. So anyway, I will make a motion to approve the resolution reversing the decision of the subdivision review.
Moved by Supervisor Robert, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Roll call, please.
Mr. Robert?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian.
Hi. Thank you.
Hey, Toby, don't say that. I already know the next one that's coming. No.
Let's not make any promises we can't keep. Let's move forward with our agenda, please.
Patty Hamilton.
If I may. Mr. Linholm, closed session items, please. And we are meeting as Board of Supervisors and the Board of IHSS.
Gail? Are we going to be considering IHSS at all?
Not today. Okay. Then just as the Board of Supervisors.
So the Board will meet in closed session concerning the great number of items listed on the agenda. And I'd suggest that we take a break, 15 minutes, so everybody will have time to get here.
What I was going to suggest that we do go to closed session, and we don't come back till 2 o'clock, so there is no in-between. We'll come back and close from the closed session at 2 and report to the public. That way we don't have to disturb Madam Clerk with her scheduling.
So that's fine. Just done until we come back at 2?
Yes, we'll adjourn to closed session after our short break.
Okay.
5:10.
5:10, and then we'll return back here at 2 p.m. to report perfect. From closed session and continue on the agenda items. Anyone from the public wishes to comment on the items for closed session? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. We'll adjourn, and 5:10, we'll meet at which room?
Upstairs.
Okay, thank you.
How long, Mr. Little?
Half hour.
20 minutes.
No, I think it'll be 20 minutes.
An hour and 20 minutes.
I'll bring the rest with me.
Don't lose them.
No.
Don't lose them. Oh, she could whip out more coffee. Oh, yeah, right.
This one here.
This afternoon, 2 o'clock.
I just had a question. Do you watch how you...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session this morning concerning the items that were listed on the agenda. The board took no action, final action in closed session, which means that no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
Thank you. And with Supervisor Patterson, do an announcement at this time about the housing education fair that's coming up.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Asajian. I just wanted to let the listening public know that the Workforce Housing Coalition, along with the County Board of Supervisors and the County Planning Department, are sponsoring a housing education fair this Saturday, September 16th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It will be held in the Betts Hall on Monterey Street in San Luis Obispo. There will be educational booths there, people talking to folks interested in either renting housing or purchasing housing in San Luis Obispo, the ins and outs of doing that. We'll also have some panel discussions from 12:30 to 2:30, again talking about workforce housing opportunities in the county. So I invite you all out if you're interested in housing, either for purchase or for rent. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce item C2 for this afternoon?
Yes, your next hearing item is item C2. This is a hearing to consider a land use element, local coastal plan, land use ordinance, and coastal zone land use ordinance amendments regarding secondary dwellings as G03-00002L, County of San Luis Obispo, and adoption of a resolution to take final action on all the amendments tentatively recommended for approval on August 22, 2006. That was for LRP 2004-00010 Orison and G030012 M. Ducey, and September 12, 2006, the general plan one that I just read, summer general plan amendment cycle 2006. And to remind your board that you had three amendments and an addition to the agenda this morning on the ordinance that's attached to your report.
Thank you. With that, staff.
Just to remind you that your action on the hearing today will be a tentative action, and at the end of the public hearing, you'll be taking final action through adoption of the resolution and ordinances on all the items that are a part of this cycle, as the clerk read into the record. And with that, I'll introduce John Bissell, who has the public hearing today.
Thank you. Mr. Bissell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, John Bissell, County Planning Staff.
Today we're here to consider the Planning Commission's recommendation to your board on the secondary dwelling ordinance changes. Now these are, there's two parts to these changes. One is the Assembly Bill 1866, which was passed 2004, which prohibits us from requiring discretionary permits automatically where we allow secondary dwellings. There are several places in our ordinance where a discretionary permit was required for a secondary dwelling, even if they met all the standards for a secondary dwelling, but that is no longer, we can no longer do that. So that's one part of these amendments. The second part is the housing element. When that was passed by your board in 2004, there was a program that asked the staff to look at our secondary dwelling ordinance, to look for ways to encourage additional secondary dwellings. So those are the two parts to the to our proposal. We looked at several areas that had been there had been issues, discussion areas with occupancy, access, parking, design, garage size, unit size, distance from the primary dwelling, and minimum parcel size. We looked at several jurisdictions around San Luis County and to see what they were doing. And they're kind of all over the map. There's, everybody has a different approach, it seems like, to the secondary dwelling ordinance, although there are some common ground there. So what we did, we had a staff committee looking at this, then we went and talked with our county advisory committees, and we had a couple of workshops, one in 2004 and one in 2005, to consider these proposals and to see what the feeling was in the community about the secondary dwelling ordinance. So out of that, we came with proposed changes. First was access. Currently, there's a chip seal requirement in all cases. The proposal is recommended by the Planning Commission. 6,000 square feet to 1 acre would be a requirement for a paved road. 1 acre or larger would be chip seal over a Class 2 base. And on the smaller parcels, in most cases, they will already have paved roads, but the feeling was that there's a higher density in these areas where the smaller parcels occur, and secondary dwellings are essentially adding to that density, and so people felt the road should be paved in those cases. On 1 acre or larger, the chip seal over a Class 2 base differs from our current requirement of just chip seal in that it places a actual road base under the chip seal, which helps to make the chip seal road a better road, and it won't crack as easily as it does when you put chip seal over dirt. For parking, currently we have one space proposed. The proposal is one per bedroom to a maximum of two spaces. This actually is pretty common throughout the other ordinances that I looked at. It isn't really an issue on the larger parcels, like the one-acre parcels in residential suburban, but in the single-family zone, people felt that if you're adding another unit, the parking is already tight in many cases, and that if you're adding a two-bedroom unit, you should be providing two spaces. So that was the rationale behind that. Size of garage, we have no current standards on the size of garage. One of the issues with the garage size has been that people have attached a large garage to their second dwellings. One example here is that, in this next slide, is that this is an example of a 1,200 square foot secondary dwelling with a garage of equal size that has been attached and looks essentially like the second dwelling, but it ends up being a house of about 2,400 square feet in appearance as a secondary dwelling. So there's been concern about that, and 1,200 is actually not as large as some of the garages that we've seen. We've seen garages of 2,000 square feet or more attached to the secondary dwelling. And currently on a site, for example, in the suburban category, you can have your primary dwelling with a garage of any size attached to that. You can have a separate detached garage of 1,000 square feet, and then you could have the secondary dwelling, for example. And then, so we felt that in order to make the secondary dwelling appear more like a secondary dwelling, that the garage size should be smaller, and to discourage these issues or these areas where the or discourage people who have been building these 2,000 or larger or 1,200 square feet or larger garages and attaching to the unit to make the house appear larger. And sometimes, you know, that then becomes part of the house later on, you know, when that happens. So that was the issue with the when we talked to advisory groups, that was a pretty common concern, and people felt that the garage size should be smaller, so we're proposing that it be limited to 50% of the size of the secondary dwelling. Next, the other issue with the garage or garage workshop is that we recommended to the Planning Commission that it had to be attached to the secondary dwelling, and the Planning Commission concurred with that. They discussed that a little bit. There was a comment from the public, one comment about that they had concerns about that because there's situations that arise where you may not be able to attach it. And this was sort of unanticipated when we went through initially. It wasn't really an issue in terms of the advisory committees, whether it should be attached or detached. That wasn't a big issue, as far as I can recall, and the workshops. But what happens if we require it to be attached, then manufactured housing pretty much is eliminated from having a garage because you can't attach a garage directly to a manufactured home because that's already built under a separate code, under the state code for manufactured housing. And you really can't physically attach a garage to it unless you have an architect design the garage to be attached, which really adds to the cost. And so I wanted to bring this to your board's attention. Your staff report and the ordinance recommends that it be attached, but we feel that it really isn't a big issue if it wasn't required to be attached in terms of what we heard from the communities anyway. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. Size of second unit is the next one. This is currently we have, it's somewhat complex in terms of reading the ordinance, but basically on the smaller lots, 640 square feet, 12,000 square feet or plus, you can have 800 square feet in the single family zone. On less than 2 acres net in other categories, you can have 800 square feet. 2 acres net with community water and sewer, 1,200, and 5 acres net with well and septic, 1,200. Now, the proposal from the Planning Commission is to, on 6,000 square feet to an acre, to limit it to 640. On 1 acre or larger, to limit it to 800 square feet. And no modifications allowed. That's part of the recommendation that we made at the Planning Commission also, that whatever size your board decides on for the secondary dwelling, that we wanted to avoid having people constantly wanting to modify that. So if your board sets it at some square footage, we're recommending, and the Planning Commission is recommending, that that not be allowed to be modified except through a variance. That would be the only way to modify it. And that would eliminate a lot of discretionary permits coming through where people were asking for additional square footage on the secondary dwelling when the community in every instance felt that, 1,200 square feet pretty much people felt was the largest they should be in terms of when we went out to the advisory committees and our workshops. Distance from the primary unit, we currently have varies between 50 feet and 500 feet. The proposal is to tighten that up a little bit, maximum of being 250 feet. On the smaller lots, the Planning Commission is recommending a maximum distance from the primary unit of 10 feet. So this is the table as the Planning Commission has recommended. You guys all have a copy. Your board all has a copy of this table. It should be a two-page, two tables, one on each page. And this is the Planning Commission recommendation. And since the Planning Commission has acted, we've had many calls on this issue of size, especially in the maximum size of the secondary dwelling. We currently allow 1,200 square feet as a maximum size. The Planning Commission, at least on the larger parcels, and the Planning Commission has recommended that to be reduced. We've had quite a number of calls and people inquiring about that issue. A lot of it is because people have built their secondary dwelling first, and they want to build their primary dwelling later. Their secondary dwelling, they may have built a 1,000 square foot or maybe a 1,200 square foot secondary dwelling. And the only way to do that under the Planning Commission's recommendation would be to add on to their existing dwelling and then come back and build a smaller secondary dwelling, which would be inconvenient to many people. And so we've heard a lot of comments about that. I think the Planning Commission felt when they were discussing this, it wasn't a long discussion, but they felt that 800 square feet was really a good size for a secondary dwelling. They felt it would be more affordable to produce a dwelling of that size. They felt that it would be clearly appear to be secondary to the primary dwelling, whereas they felt, I think, a 1,200 square foot secondary dwelling would be more like a primary dwelling. So I think that was some of the rationale behind the Planning Commission's decision. The 1,200 square feet on the larger parcels has been in our ordinance for at least 15 years, so we've had that 1,200 square feet for a long time, and many people have been planning their property development and such based on that 1,200 square feet. So the next table shows the areas where the staff recommendation of the Planning Commission and the Planning Commission differ. You can see the those places with green circles around them. On the smaller parcels, we had recommended 800 square feet. Planning Commission had recommended 640. Really haven't heard any feedback that was an issue. It's a pretty small difference from what's allowed right now. We've had some feedback on that distance from the primary unit. The Planning Commission has recommended 10 feet, and we initially recommended 50 feet. The other big area of concern has been this on 2 acres and larger parcels, where we had recommended 1,200 feet, and the Planning Commission had reduced that to 800 square feet. So those are the main areas that we've had the most comments on since the Planning Commission hearing. So with that, we recommend that you approve this general plan amendment as shown in the attached exhibits based on the findings and recommendations contained in the staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on this.
Well, we're going to have some questions, definitely. Having spoken to you folks and hear your presentation here today, the first thing comes to my mind, if we ain't broken, why fix it? With the cost of land that exists today, this is anti-large families who might be looking for a rental or even for family members to move in. And to me, it's like taking their rights away from them. As long as it's zoned for it, for another 400 square footage that we have the discretion to take that discretion away from us, I don't seem to be fair, unless I hear different from the folks who are here to speak about this. And some people that have made in support of this recommendation that this will, if its houses are smaller, it will cut down on the rent will be cheaper. And my thinking is, what controls rent is the market, not the size of the house. So every which way I look at this recommendation, I don't see the light. And maybe with other questions and comments and public input, we'll see where we go with it. In order of appearance here, let me go to Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bushell, a few slides back, when you were talking about the size of the secondary unit, you made a comment regarding community water and community sewer, and that is not a requirement, I don't believe, is it?
That's correct. The actual minimum parcel size, we're not proposing to change for a secondary dwelling. The minimum parcel size is 1 acre net with well and septic, and 1 acre gross with community water and septic, I believe. And the other standards are underneath they're not in the health and safety realm. They're under the design standards. And when it was originally went through, that was where that size was worked out through the design standards, and it really isn't a health and safety related issue. It's more in the design, although it says well and septic, but there isn't really, since our minimum parcel size is an acre net, it's not directly related to that, to the health and safety that 2 acre that's in the other part, in the design part of the ordinance.
Okay. Well,
and we're trying to correct that right now with this change on the table to make it more clear, because that's always been an issue with people reading it, trying to figure out what they could do. And so.
Right. Well, if it's under an acre, then you do have to have community water and community sewer, correct? And
right.
All right. Thank you.
Supervisor Robert.
Thank you. I have a couple other questions.
One relates to the road standards. And the difficulty I have in this is when you start talking about 2 to 5 acres and 5 acres and above, that's a heck of a distance to pave a road. You know, chip seal you think is not paving, but it's paving. And so I'm very curious as to, is there a line drawn, or is it going to say if somebody's got 30 acres and their house is on the back of the 30 acres, do they have to do it all the way back to the road, or does it have to go all the way back to county maintained road, which could be another couple miles down the road?
Current supervisor, currently the standard is for a chip seal from the property to the nearest county maintained road. Or maintained, if it's maintained by a special district.
Yes, I understand those rules.
Yeah. In this case, there would still be a chip seal. It would be over a Class 2 base, which would make it a better road, but there would still be that requirement. There is a provision that you can still ask for a modification of that requirement based on special circumstances. One of the issues with reducing the requirement below chip seal is the dust created by just based roads, and APCD is concerned about additional dust that would be created by removing that requirement. I'd have some discussions with them about that, and it's possible that if board wanted to remove that chip seal requirement, since it's a requirement right now, we would have to go back and do more environmental work on that to change.
Well, my concern is when you start getting into some of these areas that have larger acreage, especially in the 40s and 50s and that are back in the back countries. And in agricultural lands, they're allowed primary, secondary, actually two primaries and a secondary once you get over 20 acres.
Over 20 acres, it's just two primaries. And so these wouldn't apply. It would only apply for those agricultural properties that are under 20 acres in size.
Okay.
And this would only be the road that fronted the property, not an on-site driveway or something like
that. It's not clear. And if I have to start looking back to the other standards, I understand the other standard, but it wasn't mentioned in here. And again, I guess I just have to say it. 10 feet gets awful close, and I, like I said with Tacho, I'm not sure where this came from and why, but this whole issue has a tendency to argue with our own housing element. And I think the other thing that maybe it's more of a statement I shouldn't say, but why is it one time the board says we want to encourage secondary dwelling, and then we do this, which is basically flies in the face of it to kind of restrict secondary housing? So. That's my. You know, where did it come from that said we had to do this?
The 1,200 the 800 square foot.
Yeah, and you know.
Well, it came up as a last kind of an item at the Planning Commission. It wasn't expected actually, but from all of our work in the workshops and with the advisory groups, there wasn't a concern about the 1,200 square feet on the larger parcels, but the Planning Commission had that concern, so.
And I think one thing that I do understand, and I think I could agree with, is basically the limitation on the garage, because, you know, if it's 50% of the square footage, whatever that ends up being after the day, you know, there needs to be a statement about that, because they'll end up being part of the house, really.
Well done, Mr. Rowley.
Yeah.
Ms. Bianchi.
I have a question, and the question is that, assuming for the sake of the argument, which I doubt very much will happen, but I just want to ask it anyway, if there's someone who has a granny unit now that's 1,200 square feet, they don't have to chop that down to 800 square feet. 1,200 is already grandfathered in.
That's correct. If they have a primary and a secondary dwelling right now and with a conforming secondary dwelling, they would be grandfathered in that sense. Although if they came in to do other things to their property that would be technically non-conforming because it wouldn't comply with the new standard if your board changed that to 800. So that could be an issue down the road. If they came in to build something else, they'd have to go through our non-conforming section, which is complicated.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions from supervisors, I'll open it up to the public at this time. The first request to speak is John Schwind, followed by Leland Swenson. And you're welcome to use either one of the speakers.
Thank you very much, Chairman Ashajian and members of the board. My name is John Schwinn. I'm speaking here today as a member of the public. I sent you a letter, and I won't go over everything that's in the letter there, but my family is in the middle of getting a permit for our secondary dwelling. Placement of that unit is everything. When I mentioned to my mother-in-law, who's going to live in it, that the Planning Commission had proposed 800 square feet, she said, oh. She said, I might be old, but I'm not dead yet. Today's seniors might be ready to move in with their children on their property, but I don't think that means they're ready to surrender their independence and their active lifestyles and pack themselves into a little tiny box. So I think an appropriate size unit, 1,200 square feet, fits for many of families like my own who are looking to have their extended family join them on site. So I think it's appropriate. I wanted to hit a couple other points real quick. The Planning Commission has cited air pollution control or air quality benefits and social planning as the reason why they limited the size of a secondary dwelling to 800 square feet. And I did some math prior to coming to the county here. I used to be an air pollution expert. And I did the math, and a 1,200 square foot unit adds another bedroom. Another bedroom means another driver, another vehicle. That adds about 33 miles of travel a day. Doing the math, it comes out to be about 9/10 of a pound of pollution a day per unit. And to give you an idea of how significant that is, that's 0.009% of our current inventory of vehicle emissions. In other words, it's virtually trivial to suggest that the adding of secondary units has an impact on air quality. That's if you made 50 a year, you'd still have a 0.009% increase in emissions. So the air quality argument, I think, is a trivial one. And then finally, I know this Planning Commission, because I listened to their hearing, had cited the original intent of AB 1866, and they thought the intent limited the size of secondary units. But actually, if you look at the government code that was modified by AB 1866, there's actually a reference to the 1,200 square foot. It actually says for those agencies that do not have an ordinance in place, they're to use the language in the statute, and the language in the statute allows 1,200 square foot explicitly. So I think to be consistent with what the state had in mind, it would be appropriate to allow a 1,200 square foot unit as opposed to an 800. Thank you very much for your time.
John, before you leave, what was it again that your grandma said in her words?
She says, well, you don't want to hear it again. She's not dead yet, and if you ever meet her,
I was wondering if your calculation was based on hybrids or SUVs.
Oh.
Okay, we have Lillian Swenson, followed by Sandra Redimaker.
Thank you very much. I also want to speak on behalf of my mother-in-law.
Go ahead, give us your name. Don't have to have your mother-in-law's name, but your name for the record.
Lillian Swenson.
Thank you.
I live on a 2.5-acre... very irregular parcel on the top of a ridge with lots of oak trees. My mother-in-law is currently losing her vision and is a hazard upon the highways. We would like very much to have her live close to us. The only building site on our parcel that really would work out without killing a bunch of beautiful oak trees is about 90 feet from our primary residence. We would like to ask you to adopt the recommendation of changing the rule to have a 100 minimum distance between primary and secondary residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandra Redimaker, followed by John Hopkins. We have quite a few requests to speak. If you hear your name and want to come forward, that will save us some time.
Good afternoon. I'm Sandra, and I'm one of the grandmothers, and I have a very active lifestyle. I've got 2.5 acres in Arroyo Grande off of Prince Road. And part of the problem I'll have in my development is if I stay within 100 feet, I'm taking out oak trees and cutting into a hillside. So I would like to see us be able to go the 250 feet down into an area that doesn't harm the environment and allow for the 1,200 square foot unit so I can entertain my grandchildren and still have a place to live and not feel like I'm in a box. I mean, I was born and raised in this community, always thought of it as family-oriented, and I think changing those ordinances is going to hurt that for a lot of families that want to keep second, third generations being able to afford to have housing and live in this community. So I would like that to be considered, because I'm all for planning and not chopping up our countryside, but I think we need to look at this a little more as what it means to families in this community. Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins, followed by Ken Castro.
My name is John Hopkins. I'm an architect in the local community in Arroyo Grande, and I also live on rural property. I have a little under 5 acres. And my dream was to live in this area with my kids, and then when I got older, I was going to build a secondary dwelling and live on that on my own property. I don't want to live on an 800 square foot granny unit. I'd rather live in a 1200 square foot residence on my own property. And these days, as home values and property values rise, continue to rise, it becomes less and less affordable for some of us to buy additional properties in the area. So for me, our plan is to try to live on our own property in a 1,200 square foot residence. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ken Castro, followed by John Brenningham.
I'm also here on behalf of...
Your name, Ken?
My name is Ken. Excuse me?
Yeah, I'll call you with your name, but still we need you to give us your name for the record.
Oh, sure. Ken Castro.
Thank you.
And I'm here speaking for our family, and some of the things that, you know, maybe we're not taking into consideration is that it is a granny unit, and we talk about rental prices and, you know, how much it would cost to rent or build. I mean, that, in my opinion, shouldn't be a concern, but the bottom line is, and I'm going to read the statement that was given to me by my sister-in-law, we purchased this property so our family would be able to take care of one another. Our grandparents have health problems and cannot work. We also have a sister that has various rare diseases, and we need to provide family care for her children when she's in the hospital. Three of the family members have sold their individual homes in order to be on the same piece of property to take care of each other. If you vote that there will no longer be a variance for a 1,200 square foot building, this will place tremendous hardship on this family. The cost of living in this county is extremely high, and being squeezed into a much smaller space would cause extreme hardship on the family. We ask that you please allow a 1,200 square foot variance. And on my behalf, I'd like to say that they've been in the planning process for quite a while, and they were promised that they would be able to build this, and homes were sold and a piece of property purchased, all based on this 1,200 square foot allowance. In my opinion, I believe it should be increased to 1,500 square feet or 1,700 square feet. If there's going to be something good that came out of this waste of money, in my opinion, for workshops and various, you know, things to come up with ideas on how to change the county, I totally agree. If it works, you know, why fix it? If it isn't a problem that I can tell, and from what I've seen in the county, I've been here for 20 years, as far as the improvements on the road and the distance to the house, again, these are just huge increases on, you know, on what's going on. And actually, one of the houses that was mentioned in here is currently on the market to be sold. And, of course, we know what's happened to the market, you know, as far as that goes. So take into consideration the personal aspects, you know, and the lives that you're going to be affecting, the grandparents, you know, and the families that want to be together. You know, you're going to completely eliminate, you know, that is going to impact so many people, and the ramifications are going to be great. And I know that there's a lot, I just talked about this at work, and people could not believe it. So if this does happen, a lot of people are going to feel that that something's been pulled on them, and then they weren't aware of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brenningham, followed by Gail Gasho.
Chairman Asajian, supervisors, staff, audience. My name is John Brenningham, and I'm here to speak against reducing secondary dwellings from 1,200 square foot maximum to 800 square foot. I currently serve on the Economic Advisory Committee to the supervisors, and I was chair of the Secondary Dwelling Committee of the Napomo Community Advisory Council. But I'm here representing only my own opinions today. I also actually own a property with a secondary dwelling, and my wife, Sandy, and I live in the granny flat. She qualifies, I qualify as a secondary dwelling, I guess. That was a joke. Oh, well.
But you live together.
In any case, our daughter Carrie, son-in-law Andy Anderson, Carrie works with us. Andy is... was a captain with CDF. He was just promoted to battalion chief. Actually works out of the San Luis Obispo office. Our beautiful 5-year-old granddaughter and my handsome almost 2-year-old grandson.
Okay, gentlemen, now we got introduced to your family. Tell us why you're here for.
Well, you know it's all about family, gotcha. They live in the big house, which they built. We built these homes last year, and we do love our family compound. When we moved, we sold homes in Napomo and in Santa Maria, so there's somebody from CDF who works locally who now lives in Slo County. Currently, we have new neighbors that are building just across the street from us, and they're also building a 1,200-square-foot secondary dwelling for the mother-in-law. Well, I guess it would be the mother and the mother-in-law, so that they can do the same thing that we're doing. But if we had to make the decision to move into an 800-square-foot home rather than the 1,200-square-foot we now have, we simply wouldn't have gone ahead. I suspect that most other families would make the same kind of decision. We wanted smaller than a 5-acre parcel, but for cost purposes, but we had to go larger as there weren't any 800-square-foot plans that were acceptable to us. And I believe, as Cacho's mentioned, that this plan would be unfriendly to families. Let me jump ahead. I'll leave out part of that. The 400 square feet in question represents less than 2/10 of 1% of the land footprint of a 5-acre parcel and less than 5/10 of 1% of the land footprint of a 2-acre parcel and less than 1% of the land footprint of a 1-acre parcel. So covering too much of the land simply can't be the reason for this thought. And since my time is up, I'll go ahead and say, obviously,
thank
I
you.
Would like you all to go ahead and approve the 1,200 square foot.
Mr. Gosho, followed by Billy Fairbanks.
Gail Gosho, 1655 Quiet Oaks in Aurora Grande. The primary reason I'm here is to address the 1,200 square feet from the down to the 800 as proposed by the Planning Commission. We are currently owners of a 10-acre parcel and are about 90% complete with doing a lot split, creating 2 5-acre parcels. The objections that we have with this, number one, was this 1,200 to 800 was not part of the community workshops. This is something that was brought up after the community workshops and was not part of the discussion when the planning department, planning staff was out discussing the various considerations for the secondary units. So that's my number one concern. Number two is the thought that this could create more affordable housing, I think actually will work in reverse. The cost to build a 1,200 square foot versus an 800 square foot is insignificant. You're looking at an additional bedroom. The primary costs of kitchen, baths, et cetera, are already there, whether it's 800 or 1,200. So it's really minuscule compared to the costs and is not going to, certainly will not work well at all for a family of four that a 1,200 might. And then finally, this is not how we have purchased and or have created our lots. It's based on the fact that a primary and a 5-acre parcel and a secondary of 1,200. And I think the chairman was correct, and if it's not broke, why fix it? So I would certainly request that you consider and change most of these, but particularly the 1,200 to the 800, and not approve this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fairbanks, followed by, is it Jugan Sharma? My apologies for not pronouncing it correctly, but its last name is Sharma.
Chairman Cacho, Board of Supervisors, thank you for this opportunity to stand before you this day. I apologize for my appearance. I got off from work, and when I heard the issue, I'm from Colorado initially. My wife grew up here on the Central Coast, and we moved here years ago and purchased a home in Santa Maria. And then we ended up moving back to Colorado, but we're back to stay. I'm ready to put down roots. I have built a secondary dwelling on my in-laws' property. My comment would be I have 3 children, and if I was under this proposed amendment or whatever you call it, I just foresee my children's toys being, you know, the play area being in the kitchen. very tight with three children. I already have two kids in one bedroom. I can honestly say if I was restricted to 800 square feet instead of the 1,200, which is marginally acceptable, I think it's appropriate, but I think it's difficult. And, you know, I just don't see myself and my family moving to this area. I love it here. I love the people. I think we have a great community aspect. I just find it really troublesome to me to hear this even be discussed. It doesn't seem family-oriented. And I would be concerned as a new home buyer in the area doing the same thing. I wouldn't want to live any closer than my in-laws. Please understand that. I love them very dearly, but I think looking at the employees, I work for a company of about 18 employees, and I would venture to guess that none of them in the current economy with market prices the way that they are, I know probably three quarters or more are renting. And I know all of them would have the dream to own their own home. I think that the price difference between the 800 and 1,200 square foot is, like Chairman Cacho mentioned, I think it's dictated by market prices. And I feel it's a poor recommendation. And for the support of my family and those people like me moving into the area, I would recommend in all of my best interest to keep things the way that they are. I can, however, see maybe some details being worked out on the garage side. That's something that I agree with. But other than that, I think that's right there. Thank you.
Billy, you want to give us your name for the record, please?
That was one thing I forgot. Bill Fairbanks, William Fairbanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is Jugan Sharma here, if I'm saying that correctly? Anybody's name close to that? Okay. Next person, Troy.
Troy.
Followed by David Berson.
Chairman Sajjan and the board, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Troy Thorup, and I'm also opposed to these proposed changes. I'm one of the people referred to that started in reverse order, building the granny unit first, with planning to build a primary unit sometime in the future. The reason we did this is because this area is very expensive to live in, and this is really the only way we could get our start. We've been working with the Planning Commission for years, literally years, to get our entire site plan, current and future, in line with current ordinances. They've been very helpful. It's been tough at times, but we've made it through. We're now in our what we want to consider the granny unit, so that sometime in the future, which is going to be years away, we hope to be able to afford to build something larger. I think this policy is misguided in that it doesn't take into account what it does take to live in this community and the impacts that it would have. In addition, our secondary unit we have is a manufactured home, and the proposal, given that it requires a secondary unit requires an attached garage, I think is prohibitive. It pretty much eliminates an element of affordable housing from the community. A manufactured home is really the only option for many people, and by not allowing the garage, because state law says that no structure can be attached to a manufactured home, it pretty much eliminates that, or the architectural fees would be so high. Once again, it just takes away from the whole reason you got a manufactured home in the first place. So I feel there's a bias in the proposal against affordable housing there as well. And lastly, I'd just like to echo a lot of the concerns that have been brought up just about affordable housing in the area. I think we need to keep these options open for people. It's a beautiful area. It's wonderful. And everybody wants to live here, not just the extremely wealthy who can afford it, but working class people who want to raise their families here and enjoy this community, which I count myself among. And so I would urge the board to continue with the 1,200 square foot guidelines. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Berson, followed by Mr. Ed Eby.
Hi, I'm David Berson. I own 5 acres on the Napomo Mesa with a house and secondary dwelling. So this proposed theft won't immediately crimp my lifestyle. I speak to you as a libertarian for everyone's freedom. I want to thank Cacho for his wise remarks. How will the public health and safety be enhanced by deducting 400 square feet from a house on 217,800 square feet of land? This is like something Mussolini would have done in fascist Italy, command people to wear clothes that are too small, expecting they'd eat and drink less. Chopping 400 square feet off Granny's home won't affect her drinking, bathing, or flushing. It may add 400 square feet of water-intensive gardening and landscaping. Farming consumes about three-quarters of the water in SLO County, residential use just a fraction, and Granny's a small fraction of that. If water is your real concern, how about allowing farmable acreage parcels to subdivide on condition they not be farmed? Divisibility would increase the value of land, make parcels more affordable, reduce water usage, increase human freedom, and still leave plenty of jobs for the planner bureaucrat class, because construction activity would revive. What exactly will be accomplished by prohibiting property owners from building 400 square feet of housing? You will prevent some owners from constructing mini houses. Instead, they may build micro houses, larger main houses, or no houses at all. Having fewer choices will hurt property owners, families, extended families, and housing affordability. It will negatively impact property values, the construction industry, the county tax base, and property rights. Whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, that's a lot of collateral damage. I urge you to reconsider your objectives and methods, and always be cognizant of the complete consequences and costs of meddling in the free market. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Eby, followed by Michael Wint. Please, please, let's not go there.
Hello, I'm Ed Eby. I'm the chairman of the South County Advisory Council. We voted to support the change to the ordinance in our June 26th meeting. We liked the change in the ordinance because it simplified a very complicated ordinance, and it didn't increase the size of the secondary units or the distance from the houses, from the primary houses. Even though that you have heard some very compelling stories here today, the truth is that most secondary houses are no longer being built for Granny. They're being built as rental income property. Most of the requests we see before our advisory council are for larger sizes than the ordinance allows and for a farther distance from the primary house. Now, either the applicants don't like Granny and want her farther away, or they want to be far away from the tenants. I think the latter is true. The effect of a larger secondary and a farther distance away from the primary in rural areas is that the larger secondaries appear as big as the primary ones once the garages and the shops are built. It makes residential rural and residential suburban look like residential single family and residential multifamily. If the intent is to increase rental housing, then the rezoning of these properties should take place to residential multifamily and not corrupt the current zoning. I ask that you keep the Planning Commission recommendations, keep the open rural look where that was the intent of the character, because most of the residents in those areas want that. Let rental housing stay in residential multifamily zoning where it's intended.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn, followed by David Martinez. I'm sorry, it's whatever. If you come forward, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Wynn.
Sorry for interrupting, Mr. Wynn, but my apologies for not being able to read some handwritings, and some of the names are a little difficult to pronounce, so appreciate your cooperation. Mr. Wynn?
Thank you. I am Michael Wynn. And I would join my voice to the others that have asked. I'm taking notes from Eric Greening, by the way. I join my voice to those that are asking for 1,200 square foot secondaries. And I do so, and I want to make the point quickly, because there's a number of really positive things about what the staff prepared that I hope will survive any modifications you may make. Many times these units may be for a grown child who's in college and doesn't have money for a home, or for a grandmother or grandfather, not being gender specific. But in the end, I think they all end up being rentals. I mean, in the long term, children do move away, and unfortunately, parents die. But nowadays, we simply want more space than what we used to have, and people's things take up more space than they used to. And 800 square feet is very, very small. I've lived in 800 square feet in Southeast Asia. In fact, we had 20 family members that lived in 700 square feet in Southeast Asia. But these are different times in a different place. And I hope that you'll consider that when you look at the standards here. There are a number of really excellent things, though, that I hope you will retain. The distance between the primary and the secondary is actually critical, I think. It's true that occasionally you may need a MUP if there's some geography that really makes it impossible. But other than that, having long distances between essentially divides a lot and doubles the density. And you do lose the character of that the zoning was designed for. Secondly, I hope you will keep the garage limits. We've seen any number of applications that came in with 5,000 square foot garages attached to 1,200 square foot secondary homes, and it was all you could do to keep your face straight when you looked at the plans. Also, shops and do need to be limited, and if they're built overhead, for example, then the shop should not be a part of the built onto the primary. These things, I think, are excellent additions. We have had abuses of the system. There have been people who've told us one thing, and it was very obvious they were doing something else, although nothing quite in the class of the barn guy that came to you guys 3 years ago that had stained glass in the doors for his goats. But nonetheless, I hope that you will keep most of the features of what the staff have given you, but increase the size of the secondary up to 1,200 square feet. Thank you.
Thank you, David, followed by Dave Fox. Again, my apologies for mispronouncing your name.
That's okay. I apologize for my writing. My name is David Montanaro. I own 12 acres in Arroyo Grande on the Mesa. And I, like most of my friends that own property out there, purchased with the intent to, it was raw, and to build a secondary dwelling, move into that while we build the primary residence, and then have our option to do either rent the secondary dwelling to make the property more affordable for us, or have one of our in-laws move into it. But in either case, we would have the option to do that. And then possibly to split the property, because our particular zoning allows for 5-acre parcels. Now, if the zoning were or ordinance were to change to 800 square feet, then our existing property would be in a non-compliant situation where we wouldn't be able to put the 1,200 square foot house on the property that we wanted to keep, and then have the other one be vacant that we could possibly sell or develop later on. And then also, if it were to change and say the property were to be damaged, the house, the secondary dwelling would be damaged, then I don't believe that it would be able to be developed back to what it was, but then to what it would be allowed under the new ordinance, which would be 800 square feet, which would cause, I believe, economic hardship on any family that were to happen to. I think also location is an issue. Right currently, on our parcel, we were allowed 250 feet distance between the primary and secondary residence, and that was a problem for us. We didn't want to have the secondary residence that close, in that we had approximately 800 feet to work with. And when I went to planning to talk to them about that, they said, well, it's in an effort to cluster the buildings to maintain the appearance of open space. You know, with it wasn't something that we wanted to do, it almost kept us from building the secondary residence, because the location we felt was going to be intrusive on our primary residence down the road. Also, 800 square feet, I think, economically would cost a lot per square foot. Adding the additional bedrooms to an 800 square foot house wouldn't cost that much more. And I think that would be a disincentive for people to build 800 square foot properties or units on their property. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fox, followed by Terry Payne.
My name is David Fox. I live at 1690 Quiet Oaks Drive in Arroyo Grande on the Mesa. You know, it's interesting. I came here in 1941. I think the population in San Luis Obispo was approximately 6,000 people. I remember my parents and I, we lived in a house of about 650, 700 square feet then. A 1,200-foot house was a big house back then. I would ask you not to answer, but to just contemplate how many of you would like to live in a 1,200-foot home, and how many do, probably few of us. Why the 1,200-foot to begin with, I don't know. I can take a piece of property with 5 acres and I can build a 15,000-foot home on it, and then a 1,200-foot home on it. I don't know what this does to the pollution or the environment, but I think that it would have an effect. If we're going to limit one, why wouldn't we not limit the other? I don't know the answer to that problem. My answer is, why limit either? If you have the room to build, why not build? Affordability, economics, is what's going to dictate whether or not a person builds 800, 1,200, or 10,000 square feet. We have a 6,500-foot home going across the street from us. The idea of having a 1,200-foot secondary residence splits your property and then not being able to build a regular primary residence because of this 800-foot rule, I think would cripple and injure a lot of people greatly. Okay. The distance between the homes, there's all different configurations of property. If you had a piece of property that was only 200 foot wide and 1,000 foot long, or 500 foot long, what does it matter how close those houses are in reality? If they're 10 feet, 100 feet, or 500 feet, does it really impact anyone? Does anyone out there in the public really care? I sometimes wonder, and I say this not to be offensive, but some of these ideas that we are coming up with, or the staff is coming up with, what's their intention? What are they trying to accomplish? I think that should be addressed and questioned. As was mentioned earlier by Mr. Cacho and others, if it ain't broke, leave it alone. Don't try and fix it. I am very much against this new proposal. I think it should be left alone, and I do, as one gentleman said, I think that it should be addressed and find one valid reason not to even increase the secondary residence. What is it going to hurt if it's 1,200 feet or 1,500 feet or 1,600 feet?
Thank you, Mr. Fox. And let me assure everyone that today's staff's recommendation is a direction given by the Planning Commission. Their recommendation to the Planning Commission was different than what they recommend here today. Terry Payne, followed by Carlos, and I don't know if it's I-double-L or W, could be Guillermo. Yeah, please, you're next, if you'll come forward.
Good afternoon, Terry Payne. And I'm here to speak in support of retaining the 1,200 square foot unit. I am an example of having a secondary unit. I'm not in the county, but I'm in the city, and we've fought through this issue there. I'm a fortunate grandmother. 12 years ago, I was blessed with a grandson. Unfortunately, he had a severe handicap. Without having a secondary unit to provide a home for my daughter and my grandson, there would have been no option other than to go on state aid. With that availability, it enabled me to help them more, not only financially, but physically. My grandson was not able to leave the house for several years, and that put a mental restriction on my daughter. I mean, to be in a compound of 800 square feet would have been a real, not just an inconvenience, but mental inconvenience as well. So I'm just saying, as a recipient of the 1,200 square feet, I'm totally in support of that.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Guillermo, followed by Wes Burke.
Hello. My name is Carlos Guillermo. I own 5 acres in Los Osos, purchased last year with the idea, the intent to build a secondary dwelling of a reasonable size. I'd ask who here would like to live in 800 square feet, especially on 5 acres, considering that the proposal right now is to to limit it to 640 on a much smaller property. You know, 6,000 square feet to 12,000 versus 5 acres. 640 versus 800 just sounds unreasonable. I'd recommend, unless there are stronger reasons and arguments for making such big changes to the current ordinance, I don't see reasons to change it. I'd like to hear stronger reasons. So I'd like to recommend leaving it like it is.
Thank you. Mr. Burke, followed by Roger Anderson.
Good afternoon, Supervisors. My name is Wes Burke. I'm here to echo most of what you've heard. I would like to address what I believe is the hidden intent here, which is to prevent rental properties. That's what I think is really going on. I think that was alluded to by the previous speaker, the chair of the advisory council. And I believe that it's inaccurate. I'm a real estate broker as a professional. My experience is that in the urban areas, the granny units and secondary units very often are utilized as rental properties. However, as has been the testimony here today, the majority of the secondary dwelling units in rural settings is used for family members, often to combine generations within a family to address the affordability issue that we have in the county. The previous speaker indicated that most of the projects that they see come before the council are for proximity exceptions and square footage exceptions. I would like to point out that that's rather misleading. If there weren't some exception being requested, it would not be a discretionary issue that went before the advisory council in the first place. I believe that you have a philosophy that understands density has a dramatic impact on affordability. You know that we have an affordability crisis, so why on earth would you take action to reduce density when you know we need to increase density? I would suggest that you bear in mind reducing square footage minimums is the equivalent of a land take. You would be extracting value from the property owners. I believe that to be highly inappropriate. You have heard testimony from several property owners today that purchased property well aware of this ordinance. And if you reduce the square footage, you will have a negative impact on the value of their land. And in a market that is declining rather rapidly, that is a bad thing to do. If you read the paper, I know if I was a supervisor, I'd probably avoid the papers. But the paper just reported that foreclosures are up in our county over 100%. And I'm here to tell you that those are lagging statistics. The reality is more like 300%. Please don't exacerbate what's going on out there. I would not only encourage you not to reduce the square footage on the secondary dwellings, but I would encourage you to increase it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, followed by Chris Helenius.
Roger Anderson from Morro Bay. I'm in agreement with many of the speakers who do understand that a lot of these secondary units are used for family. I represent the fourth generation of my dad's family to grow up here from childhood in this county. My children represent the generation that probably won't be able to stay here if they want to have their own home. And we can see that in many of our communities. As population increases, the school population decreases. Young families don't get to stay here as easily as they used to. One of the best ways to address that and to address our shortage of workforce housing is to make more efficient use of the residential properties we have. I've lived in a 1,200 square foot home. Stevie and I were remodeling a home she bought many years ago. She raised her kids in. 1,200 square feet is pretty small for a family with children and all that's been pointed out. And for secondary units to be put on properties so that families do have the opportunity to stay in the area, kids who grow up here can perhaps move into a secondary unit on their parents' property and raise their children here and stay here, which is the dream I think of most of us who grow up here, is to be able to stay here, not be forced to leave, as some of my children are having to face. It's a reality. My daughter and my stepdaughter both live in Portland, Oregon. Young families can buy very serviceable homes in Portland, Oregon for under $250,000. And, you know, that's not a reality here. But a secondary unit offers an opportunity to stay that if it's large enough to be reasonable for not just a granny, but for a young couple and their children. And a minimum of 1,200 feet, I think, is in order for that scenario. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Helenius.
Chairman, board members, my name is Christopher Helenius. I have had to put a hold on an application for a building permit. I put a hold on that about 2 months ago. The application was for a building permit for a manufactured home and a 600 of about 1,180 square feet and a 600 square foot garage. I put a hold on it because of my awareness that the Planning Commission had made these recommendations that you're looking at here today. And I want to tell you that this is on a 5-acre parcel. We're doing a 4-lot parcel map down in Pomo. It had been my plan for my wife and I to move into this manufactured home while I build a main unit on the property, and then I was going to convert the dwelling into a secondary dwelling, the manufactured dwelling, with a detached garage, which I understand would be disallowed under the proposed changes that you're looking at here, so that we would then make the move into the permanent dwelling or primary residence and convert the secondary dwelling into a rental unit when we were done with this process. Now, I've been married for 37 years, and I don't think my relationship would survive living in 800 square feet. So if you're planning on adopting this rule, there's no way I'm going to go forward with this. I'm going to scratch the plan to put this secondary, well, I guess the way it works, we have to call it a primary residence initially and then convert it to secondary dwelling later when we seek to get the building permit for the primary or larger unit. So I'm here to tell you that this has real-world consequences in that we won't go forward with this project. There's no way that we could live in 800 square feet. It's a ridiculously small amount. So I urge you to maintain the rule of 1,200 square feet for parcels of that size. Also, I hope you take a hard look at this issue about whether garages need to be limited to 400 square feet. I designed this as a 600 square foot garage with the idea that it would hold two cars and a small area for a workshop. There's no way that you can fit two cars and a small workshop or workbench area into 400 square feet. And finally, with respect to the detachment, that won't work, as you heard. I was late, but I listened to the hearing on the radio, and I heard you guys discussing this issue about detachment with respect to manufactured homes. But there needs to be no reason to enforce attachment for any of the garages that would go on these units. I hope you do not adopt these stringent measures. Thanks.
Thank you. Did Mr. or Mrs. Sharma make it back? No. Okay. That was the last request to speak. At this time, I will close it to the public and bring it back to supervisors. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make a comment to folks that talked about the size of secondary units, and we only had one individual speak in support of the Planning Commission recommendations to reduce them down to 640 square feet and 800 square feet. And the issue really relative to size is the larger you make them, the more people that they can house. And what happens is when you have more bedrooms, you have more people living there, and the greater potential for traffic on the streets, higher demand for services and resources like water and sewer services and that sort of thing. And we're talking about single-family residentially zoned properties. And when you allow larger homes on those properties, you're, in essence, making them multifamily residential properties one unit at a time. And so it does have those impacts that more people bring to neighborhoods that were originally designed for single-family residences. Now, single-family parcels with an allowed second unit, when you do it incrementally one unit at a time, you don't get the overall cumulative impact assessment that you would if you were doing a subdivision and increasing density and that sort of thing. But the secondary units do provide housing for family members. They do provide rental housing for the community. I think that when you put them in a single family zoned area, you do need to control the size. I'm supportive of what the current zoning allows with 1,200 square foot homes, and then on the very small parcels, I think originally from 6,000 square feet to 2 acres, the homes could be 800 square feet on those smaller sizes, but the 2 acres and above was 1,200 square feet. That's the current zoning recommendation, and I'm supportive of that. Where we've had issues here before the board in the past is with our current ordinance, there was no limit on the size of the garage. And we literally had people coming in here with a plan to build a 1,200 square foot home and a 3,000 square foot garage that was attached. Well, you tell me that, you know, that's a 1,200 square foot home. No, it's a 4,200 square foot home. So I like the recommendation that we limit the garage size to 50% of the residence, because that would keep that kind of situation happening again. And I see that's the biggest benefit out of making these changes, is if we can change it so we get a handle on the size of the garage, so we don't have people taking advantage of that opportunity to really build a 4,000 square foot home and calling more than half of it a garage. And 600 square feet, as this gentleman recommended, it's plenty large for two cars and a storage or work area. Also, as Mr. Bushell, our planning staff, commented, that when you are on single-family residential property, you can build the primary residence and a 1,000-square-foot detached shop also. So you have that ability to do that anyway. So I have a question for staff on our staff report, C2, page 42, where we have the table. I don't know if you're able to project that on the screen or not, but I believe that table illustrates what is currently allowed in our secondary dwelling ordinance, which is 800 square foot homes on parcels 6,000 square feet up to 2 acres, and then 2 acres and above, 1,200 square foot homes. It has 50 foot, and that's maximum difference between the primary and secondaries on the smaller ones. 100 foot maximum separation on the 2 to 5 acres, and then 250 feet maximum separation on the 5 acre parcels. Is that correct? Is that what's currently in the ordinance?
Supervisor Patterson, currently on the smaller parcels, we're at 640 square feet on that 6,000 square feet to an acre.
Actually, if the clerk could...
What is that table on C242?
This was our recommendation to the Planning Commission originally, and then they tweaked that a little bit and added another...
I know they added another size.
What's on the screen right now is pretty much what is required by the ordinance today. So on the very small lots, it's a 640 square foot minimum, a little larger, 800, and then over 2 acres is pretty much 1,200.
Okay, right. That's the table on C242. Right, that's the current ordinance.
Except for the fact that our table on C242 has an 800 square foot on that smaller parcel, whereas currently...
Oh, I see.
Currently
I'm
it was
sorry.
640, yeah.
Yeah.
So actually, so it's a minor difference, but...
But this doesn't give in details of the size of the garage, and your recommendation is 50%.
Right.
Your recommendation to the Planning Commission was what we see here, plus reducing the garage size to be equivalent of 50% of the secondary.
Correct.
That's correct. And attached, which you've heard testimony today that that's a problem when it comes to manufactured housing. So.
And that would be detached?
We originally recommended to the Planning Commission that it be attached. We didn't think about the manufactured housing issue, to be honest, at that time, and that has come up with manufactured housing. The idea was we would have kind of a smaller overall footprint. Through our workshops, we really didn't hear any concern about attached versus detached from people. So if your board wanted to have them detached, I don't think it would make much difference.
I think in the case of the type of the housing, we should have that discretion.
It would give you more flexibility.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, were you done?
I am.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi?
Yes, I was concerned about the attachment to a manufactured home. It seems to be a real problem, so I would like to have that the garage is attached or detached. Can we make that discretionary or have some solution to that problem? Let me put it that way.
The one option would be for your board to exempt the manufactured housing from the attachment requirement, or you could just eliminate the attachment requirement altogether and say they could be attached or detached at the homeowner's discretion. I don't think it would make much difference from our point of view there.
Okay. Well, I was listening to what everyone said, and I was thinking about my own life, you know, and so I'm going to go through these and make comments. On the distance from the primary unit on the smaller 6,000 square feet to 1 acre. You know, I had a family member who lived a mile and a half from us, and that was too close. Well, it truly was. This is years ago in another life in another town. So I would support the 50 feet, truly. Because sometimes togetherness can be a little much. I've lived in 800 square feet, and I don't support the Planning Commission changes, actually. I support the staff recommendations. I think they're much more reasonable and have been truly thoughtful. So much as I love the Planning Commission in this instance, I really can't support what they recommended. 1,200 square feet, I've lived in a house that size, and it's certainly doable. And people in Japan, families live in 400 and 500 square feet. I recognize this is not Japan, and we got a lot more room. However,
we're bigger.
I think 1,200 square feet is adequate. 800 for the smaller ones is fine.
Actually, when I was a college student, it looked good, but not anymore. Mr. Elvitt, followed by Mr. Lentil.
It was a garage
that we rented, yeah, three of us.
There wasn't a lot of room for four people in a two-bedroom apartment.
My station wagon came handy, too.
He graduated from the car, the moving van. Anyway,
the things I want to... I have a point when we stand up here and we start talking about what they're going to do as far as a rent. Is his primary issue. Having built a secondary residence for family members, it was built with the idea that they would help pay the mortgage or the cost of building it. And since they then they moved out and basically a caretaker moved in to take care of the property or take care of the family. There's all kinds of different people that basically are classified as quote-unquote renter if you want to classify them as a group of people. But I would dare say that a lot of these families are not doing this for nothing to allow their family members to move in, but they're assisting them to live at a less cost. The other thing I had was this 10 feet. Really all that's going to give you if you make the maximum distance 10 feet is they're just going to throw a carport or something over top of it and eventually close it in, and then you're going to have a 10 or 20,000 square foot house with this addition onto it. I guess I agree with everybody else, and I'm ready to make a motion.
Let me go to Supervisor Lento, and I'll come back for you for a motion.
Can I say something?
Please.
No, and I do support the garage.
The garage.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Mr. Lento?
Thank you. I also don't think we need to have attached garages, not only for the manufactured housing, but it takes away a lot of discretion with the architects, and these things should be on a case-by-case basis. The speaker that said each piece of property is different couldn't have said it better, and that's how they should be judged. I do believe in 50% of the garages. We have had some issues come before us that have been addressed before. We have the 1,200-square-foot unit, and the 2,000-square-foot garage with a 800-square-foot laundry room, I think, or if I recall. I mean, looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's probably a duck. But anyway, the other thing I'm having difficulty with is this 10-foot setback. And there again, we've had situations where, and I think one of the speakers mentioned it today, if he were to build on his property, the 10-foot rule would mean he would take down more oak trees and things. And it takes away discretion. It takes away the ability of an architect or the homeowners to say, this is what works best in my specific application. And I'm always reluctant to say this one-size-fits-all county ordinance is going to work for us. So the three issues that I have concerns with here were 640 square feet, I think, is too small. If you can make 800 square feet, it should be that. On the smaller lots, we should stay with 1,200. We should have 50% for garages, and we should have 10 feet go back to 50 feet. I think pretty much follow our planning department's recommendations here. My thoughts.
Mr. Owett?
Yeah, and in doing so, we're going to make some changes on this. Can those be done as a motion with the combined general plan, or you're going to have to come back?
You can make those changes today, introduce and take final action.
Okay.
You're not yelling at me, so I'm assuming I'm correct.
Yeah. I mean, the motion I'm making now is tentative, and then the final motion could include these changes.
Right.
And that would be done. Okay, then the issues that we have, would make a motion to approve the recommendations to the ordinances concerning secondary dwellings as this. 2 acres and below would be a minimum size of 800 square foot with 50-foot minimum distance. 2 acres and above would be 1,200 square foot, with 2 to 5 acres and above being 250 feet. Setback, and that the rule of the 50% floor space to garage remained as I think was what's recommended, and that we eliminate the regulations on detached or attached units and garages. And there needs to be a reference referring to the roads, because you put in number 2 and number 3 on here. It's confusing as to whether you're talking about on property or the offsite.
Staff would recommend note 3, that you just continue that sentence to read along the property frontage and back to the nearest maintained road.
Okay, I was going to say per section, but that's fine because this goes both 22 and 23.
Right.
Yeah.
Second.
And those are the major changes.
Hold on. Motion made by Supervisor Ovid. Seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Under discussion, Mr. Patterson, I also have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Ovid, I was curious about the distance from primary unit. You said 2 acres and above would be 250 feet,
mm-hmm.
rather than the current that says 2 to 5 acres would be 100 feet.
You've got two, in all of these situations, you've got two levels. From 2 to 5 acres, it said 100, and from 5 and above, it says 250. And I'm just kind of using that KASS principle. You know, if I make it 2 acres and less for 800 square feet, and it's 50 feet, and if I make it 2 acres and above, it's 250 feet, and I don't have to worry about any other kind of complication.
Simplifying the ordinance.
Yes. That's a better way of saying it.
Well, my question on this distance, if we have lost that, do we still have the discretion if somebody want to ask for a waiver because mm-hmm. we want to give that message to the audience? Yeah. Here and those who are listening, that that's still available in case they have a piece of property that, to keep it within the distance, might have to take oak trees or environmental sensitive area disturb. They still have that. Okay.
There is a variance section in here on that. Yeah.
With that, a roll call, and this is a tentative motion. We're going to come back.
Right. Your final action would occur
right after this.
In about a minute and a half, it sounds like.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shahjian?
Aye. And your next motion, Mr. Ovitt?
Would be to move on the... this would be a permanent motion to rule on the previous two land use amendments and the ordinance as amended for the secondary units.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Linthal. Comments on the motion? Seeing none, a roll call, please.
I have a question. How is that changing the existing ordinances? Is that changing something in the existing ordinances that are in the packet?
Yes, the action that they just took would change two of the ordinances.
Do we need to read those into the record as for where those changes will be in the ordinance? I think we do.
County Council's nodding their head, which is usually a good sign.
It would be on your pages C2. Well, it'd actually be the replacement pages that were given to you this morning, which, if numbered in the same way,
they are.
It would be on your page C276, would modify the table, and note 3. On page C277, would modify 6, number 6 there, garage/workshop, to delete the words "and is required to be attached to the secondary dwelling." Would change page C280 and 81, the table is split between those two pages, would modify that table, and again note 3. And 6 again, would delete the words "and is required"
Thank you.
To be attached. And I also did want to point out, the way the resolution is written today, the ordinance relative to secondary dwellings would not become effective until January 1st, 2001.
Any other
or one? 2001. Wow. 2007.
So you don't count birthdays anymore, huh? The other ones become effective 30 days.
Except for coastal, which will become effective whenever coastal.
But the other two are not coastal, they're both.
Right. Yeah.
Are we clear on the motion, Madam Clerk?
We are.
Can we have a roll call?
Yes, you can. Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shahjian?
Aye. Anything else, Madam Clerk?
Yeah.
Okay. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Hey, Cammy. Yeah, I mean, have the last 6 years really been that much of a blur? Just
anyway,
one long year.
You want to go to that?
I will try. Where is that, at your house?
No, it's on Hanging Tree. You got to go to Templeton.